You're listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast.
Welcome back to episode 15 of the Faith Unpacked podcast with Jason and Jamie. We're responding to a listener question today. The question is, how do you know when someone's the one in relationship to dating or seeking a spouse? It's a common viewpoint that has been around for a long period of time and is believed, I guess, by a lot of folks. But the question is this a biblical concept? Is that where it comes from? It's a lot like the idea of love at first sight. You know, these two concepts have been around forever. And recently I was watching a news morning show as I was getting ready for the day. And the topic of discussion was love at first sight. And one of the women panelists was saying that she believed in love at first sight. And what was really funny is one of the other panelists who had stated a position not in favor of the concept asked her how many times she'd been married. And she said her response to that was to say that she'd been married 4 times. I think the concept of the one or a soulmate, like that one perfect person that God has designed specifically and purposefully for you as an individual, is a concept that is really flawed. This isn't really a biblical concept. In fact, you don't find the concept of the one or the soulmate, the one person that can seemingly completely meet your need or fulfill you 100%. This is not a very biblical concept. And in fact, so when we search for where does this concept come from, what we discover is the only place this idea seems to have its origin is actually not in the Bible, but it is in fact in the writings of Plato's Symposium, where he tells the story of how back in the day of the gods, the human was getting too powerful and was becoming a threat to the gods themselves. And so Zeus, the god, I'm not sure which god he is, but one of the big ones, ended up splitting the human into two. And the purpose for that was to cause them to seek each other for completion. And then once they found each other, would be so obsessed with keeping that relationship that they wouldn't become a challenge to the gods again. And so obviously it's a really weird story and nobody believes that. And yet that seems to be, at least in a historic sense, the origin of this concept, this idea of the one or a soulmate. Gary Thomas, the author of the book Sacred Search, picks up this idea of soulmate in that book. And what he says is, instead of searching for a soulmate, S-O-U-L, you know, that one individual, that one special person to complete you, it's better to look for a soulmate, S-O-L-E, the one person for life. And this idea, I think, is a pretty biblical concept when you really think about it. I was trying to think of a good biblical place that speaks to this idea. And one thing that came to my mind is 1 Corinthians 7, where Paul is talking about marriage and sexuality and even deals with singleness and marriage and all these questions. And he gets down into giving advice towards the end of the chapter to the widow or to those who have been married and then have lost their spouse. And his advice to them is if they can stay single, that's awesome. But if not, marriage is great as well. And the advice he offers in verse 39 is that they're free to marry anybody in the Lord. So the focus is not on a specific one unique special person that God has created for you, but instead focus on somebody who exhibits a life of faith and is walking in line with the Lord Jesus Christ, that's a much more valuable or potential life partner. And certainly in a biblical construct, we are encouraged to that end instead of marrying people of a different faith or a different idea. Now, that's a really fast fly through of that topic.
Yeah, and this is a huge question. I'm glad we're addressing it just because I think there's a lot of errors when it comes to thinking through how can we find God's will when it comes to finding a mate or finding just the right person to date. Part of that comes from, I think that our interactions in the 21st century are so geared according to digital and social media that online dating, because of that, its presence in our lives, even if we're not actually using online dating apps and tools, we're still, in a sense, being guided by some of the constructs that are used. So let me give you just a couple examples. When you go onto an online dating app, one of the biggest things that you focus on is who am I compatible with? There's this incredibly huge focus on compatibility with somebody. And in ways, as you've just outlined, Jamie, you want to look at, is this person in the Lord? In other words, does this person love Jesus? Are they committed to the mission of God? Are they someone that I can have the same core beliefs in common with? That's a good question to ask, but I would say that there's a problem with thinking about compatibility in the wrong way, which would be essentially putting in all these attributes and interests that really describe yourself and saying, I need to find someone who meets these criteria. And what that does is that actually twists and distorts a lot of what I believe the purpose of romantic relationships are when it comes to what we find in scripture, what we find just in our own lives. The purpose of these relationships are not simply to just gratify our own desires and find somebody who's essentially a mirror image of us, but God actually uses these relationships to change us. And so this whole idea of I need to find someone who has this high compatibility with me, that assumes that God doesn't want to use a romantic relationship to grow us and change us. And it assumes that sanctification doesn't happen as we get to know people who are in many ways different than us. That's just one thing. I just like to throw that out there as just be on your guard, be aware of this idea of needing to find someone who's compatible with you, because I just don't think that scripture at all gives emphasis to that way of thinking.
In all reality, right, men and women are completely different, and to a degree, we're very much not compatible. I mean, that's a pretty well-established concept or reality. If you've ever had family members or friends or interacted with people of the opposite sex at all, you quickly realize, yeah, men and women, they think very differently, they behave very differently, and in most respects are wired very differently. So it's like, what would you expect when you bring two very different people together? You're gonna have some challenges there in terms of, bringing that together. And so I kind of wonder, one of the things I think seems to be evident in this idea of a soulmate is the expectation that they're going to completely complete me, right? Like they're gonna absolutely fill and meet all of my desires and be that which my heart is longing for. And the reality is when that's true, we're actually asking for another person to be God to us.
Right. That's huge, because that's the language we use. And I would just point to Exhibit A. Look at the most popular songs on the radio today. And of course, I'm talking about songs that are love songs. You just look at what they what they say. Essentially, if the artist is describing a relationship that's going well, it's heaven. There's even songs that use that kind of language, like, when I'm with you, I'm in heaven. I need nothing else. I'm totally satisfied. Everything I could ever ask for, I find in you. Now, that's worship language. That is God language. That's just, let's be totally frank about this. That is idolatry of relationships. And then what we see on the other, on the flip side, is if the artist is describing a relationship that's broken off, it's that sense of despair. Or actually, often it's like, I'm going to get back at them. I'm going to take vengeance on them for depriving me or cheating on me, whatever it is. But they've made that relationship, that romantic experience, ultimate. And I think that's what you're getting at.
Yeah, I really like the way Gary Thomas puts it in that book, that, you know, we're not looking for a soulmate, S-O-U-L, but we're looking for a soul, S-O-L-E, mate, in terms of one person for life, meaning I'm going to be committed to the hard work of relationship with the person that I've chosen before the Lord, and that's going to take a lot of work, but the end result is, you know, a beautiful and profitable thing. I'm sure you could speak to that. Right. As a married person, did you find that getting married was the thing that just met all of those needs and didn't require any work at all and was just that perfect fit sort of thing?
Well, and I mean, I think you're knowing my response is, I think if we have that expectation going into a marriage, we're going to run into a lot of disappointment quickly. Fortunately, thankfully, I had a lot of counsel that guarded my heart from thinking that way about marriage and putting it in such a lofty position. And I want to be clear about this, that I am so thankful that the Bible actually gives the most positive, beautiful, and you could even say majestic portrait of marriage. I mean, it is the highest of human relationships, just because it encompasses, you know, friendship. It encompasses you're forming a family. There's the romantic aspect, and there's this commitment and covenant that pictures our covenant with God. God's the way that God has designed marriage, in fact, is that it's a picture of the gospel. We see that in Ephesians 5. So I think it's good to have just that balanced perspective going into it. And I think I'm thankful that I think I did, at least on one level. But sure, once you actually enter the marriage relationship, I think you there's always going to be things that you didn't expect, or you know, things that you would have liked to have happened a certain way. But at the end of the day, I'm thankful that my selfish picture of what I was expecting didn't pan out, and I'm thankful that I have been changed because of being married to my wife. And I think that's something that just Christian singles in general, I think they need to hear that marriage will change you, and you should not have too lofty a picture of it, but you also shouldn't have too low a view of it. And really, we actually see both sides in the church and in the world at large, but I'm thinking of the church specifically now, where we can think of marriage and see all the negative aspects, like loss of freedom, loss of, you know, we could even put it this way, loss of freedom to do ministry. And what we can end up doing is thinking of it as kind of a negative picture, and we can be actually fearful of marriage because of that, focusing on the negatives. When you read about marriage in the Bible, the most often way it's described is as a beautiful, powerful, life-changing relationship that's portraying the gospel that should be at the center of our lives. But I mean, there's also going to be, I think we should get to this soon, where when we think about dating in particular, so how do we practically begin looking for someone to date without making some big mistakes? Because I think the fear factor is there, where people are wondering, should I even enter into a dating relationship with this person? What needs to be some criteria to think through before doing that? So, I mean, I guess some of the things that I thought of, obviously, the prime thing that you want to look for is someone who belongs to Jesus. That's, you know, I've told people this countless times. Missionary dating is a horrible idea. And that's simply because if you are going into a dating relationship, there should be this, at least in your mind, this idea that you may end up married to this person. If you're getting into a dating relationship, you may end up married to that person. And if you're entering a dating relationship just for recreation, I think you need to check your heart motives, because it's one thing to say, I don't know if I'm going to marry this person, but boy, I'd like to get to know them better. I think they'd be someone I'd potentially be interested in marrying someday. So I want to date them to get to know them better. I think that's a good, healthy way of looking at it. And then the opposite error is thinking, you know, I can only enter this dating relationship if I'm convinced I am going to marry this person, because that's what the dating relationship leads to. And I don't think we need to take that view. I think it is okay to explore options, so to speak, through dating. Part of it is you're getting to know that person and making sure they really are who they seem to be. I think dating allows you that passage of time where you're spending time with them and truly seeing them for who they really are. You're getting to know their family, their friends, who they hang out with. You get to know a person during that time. And so you shouldn't be thinking, I have to marry the person I'm in, or, you know, I have to be thinking marriage right away when you're entering the dating relationship. But it should be at least in your mind, hey, this is a possibility. And so that's why you don't want to enter a dating relationship with somebody you absolutely cannot marry in the future. That's just, I think, common sense. But as is often the case, we don't often think through things in that common sense way when we're focused on, boy, I am attracted to this person and I could see this person being a great fit for me, without actually thinking through what is at their spiritual core. Do we actually share the same convictions? Which in the Bible, that's the number one criteria for the marriage relationship.
I also think that there's a wisdom element of recognizing that when in a relationship with someone, you have a massive blind spot. That blind spot is you're blinded by that person and your feelings towards them, to the degree that oftentimes you don't notice or you don't see the things that you really need to see or be concerned about. And so the way we counter that is by committing to engaging that relationship in open community. Meaning, you know, when I'm dating someone, I'm trying to get them in front of my family, in front of my close friends, in front of my mentors, in front of, you know, the people that know me and care about me and are able to evaluate that person in light of not being blinded by those things. And they're able to give us more hands-on, I think, or more practical help in terms of, yeah, have you noticed these, you know, potential red flags or, you know, stuff like that.
Right. And I think that's just something where we should be thinking in terms of community as a Christian in general, way more than we do. I think we often just make decisions in isolation thinking, oh, well, you know, this is my life, this is centered around what I'm going to do, my choices. You know, I'm going to be living with this person for the rest of my life. Therefore, I should be the one making the evaluations full stop. When, in fact, Christians, because of the way God has designed the church, Christians are intended to use these gracious resources of the church community and who they fellowship with, who know the Lord. Because, yeah, we all have blind spots. And especially when it comes to romantic relationships, I think that those are where blind spots easily crop up, just because as we've already been talking about, there's such an easy you could just slip into an idolatrous perspective on relationships so easily. Just like there's so many other areas that are like that, like money, career. Romantic relationships is one of those where we can very easily put it in a position that it should not be, and so because of that, we can make very foolish decisions. And Proverbs talks about the wise man seeking counsel from many and making decisions based on the wisdom of multiple people, not just seeking one person's opinion who thinks just like you, but talking to people who have observed certain things, people who have gone before you, have had experience in romantic relationships and can offer some biblical wisdom. I think that's huge, because yeah, it's not a good sign if you find yourself pairing off with somebody and no longer being part of the faith community, and you're now cutting off yourself from the wisdom that should be speaking into your life at that exact point.
Yeah, I think we also got to address two more questions, so I'll throw these out here. The first is, what's the biblical way, or what's the Christian way a couple should go about a relationship? I've heard a lot of people say, you know, dating is the way this is done in the Bible, courting is the way this is done in the Bible, you know, all of those different perspectives. And I often, you know, will joke with people when they come and hold a perspective where they're saying this is the biblical way. I'll say, you know, the Bible has seemingly lots of different ways people get together. For example, Adam had his wife made out of one of his ribs. Hosea was told by God to marry a prostitute. David had to turn over 200 foreskins to get his wife. The king of Babylon had a beauty contest for a wife. You can go on and on down that list. Obviously, nobody would argue that those are prescriptive methods or something. And the point is to say that the Bible doesn't really give us clear guidance on a way, but the Bible does give us guidance on what that should look like. So maybe respond to that, and then also respond to, I think, a corresponding question to that. Is it okay, or is it appropriate for sex or sexuality to be a motivating factor in seeking marriage relationships?
Yeah, so I mean, that's good way to pose the question. I think, for first off, the Bible, we should just have candor and say the Bible says nothing about dating per se. And by that, I mean the cultural idea of dating that we have today, about how we find a mate and how we pair off and, you know, how we eventually arrive in marriage. In other words, that is not what you find in the Bible, because that's a cultural idea. So that's not something even that's been, in fact, our perspective on dating is not something that's been around for very long historically. But having said that, the Bible offers mountains of wisdom on what to look for in a man, what to look for in a woman, and that potential spouse, things to be thinking about. I like the book of Ruth because, for me, it offers in narrative form what you see so many other places, like in Proverbs, about what did you want to look for in a mate? What do you want to look for in a potential spouse? And the two things that show up there are character and chemistry. And really, character, because this is where I think the passage of time really helps fill that out. People on the surface can be very charming, can be very attractive, and can captivate you very quickly because of their appearance, because they're very social and good communicators, whatever it might be. But character is something that you really need to see over time. Part of what you see in the book of Ruth is when Boaz seeks out Ruth, he finds out about what she has done for her mother-in-law, Naomi. And he's interested in her first because of her reputation. And he even brings that up in the third chapter of Ruth, that she has a reputation of nobility among the women. And that's something that's attractive to him. Now, she is a young woman, and she's no doubt physically attractive. There's that chemistry aspect, too. But he is first interested in her character, and vice versa. Boaz is this godly man that when Ruth first meets him, he is looking out for her. He tells her, please help yourself to glean from my fields. He's this wealthy man. He says, glean from my fields, take what grain you want, but be sure you hang out with the other young women because I want to protect you. I want you to not go off by yourself. There's men who are who would take advantage of you, so I want you to be safe. He's already seeking her protection and providing for her in that way. And so, because in the marriage relationship there are roles, there's this complementary relationship between the man and the woman, you need to see, I would say, the early form of that even in the dating relationship. If a husband is called to nourish and cherish and care for his wife and sacrificially love his wife, the man in the dating relationship then needs to be the one showing honor to the woman by opening the door for her, by assisting her, by picking her up, by letting her talk during the dates, whatever it is, whatever that looks like, not always choosing the basketball game that you want to go to, but being open to where she wants to go and what she likes to do. These are all things that, those are good signs. And this is a man who likely has your interests in mind, and he's looking out for you if he's doing these kind of things. And similarly, if the woman is responding to this, to the man's leadership, and is not always, you know, saying, wait, I need to be leading in what we're going to be doing, and I need to be making all the decisions here in the dating relationship, that's a red flag, because in the marriage relationship, when they actually are covenanted together, it's the man who is called to be the head of the home and be the sacrificial leader, and it's the woman who's called to respond to that leadership. And so you want to see early forms of that in the dating relationship. What was your other question? I've already forgotten.
One of the questions folks ask in the church a lot is about sex as a marriage motivator. Is that appropriate? Is that not appropriate? Pursuing marriage with those objectives involved as well, not involved in acting them out in a dating relationship, but as a marriage motivator, if that makes sense.
This is one where you want to find the happy balance, I guess, similarly to what we've been saying about other areas. And that's because if we have a healthy biblical understanding of sexuality and sex, what that is, we will see it as a good thing that is part of the original creation. It is designed for the marriage covenant between a man and a woman. It's, you know, God gave us this gift, gave the human race this gift so that procreation would be enjoyable, so that intimacy would take place in that covenant relationship. So we want to have a healthy view of sex where we don't treat it as this God that everything in marriage is all aiming at this alone. But we also don't want to think of it as this gross or perverted thing simply because it's not biblically permissible until marriage. So it's always a beautiful thing in that covenant relationship. It should be something you actually look forward to when you're married. But yeah, it's, I think too often people are given this picture in the churches, I should say. People are given this picture of they focus on the wickedness of sex before marriage, but what they don't often give people, I think, a picture of is just the beauty of the design that God has called this very good. He designed it. So it's a gift from him. We need to see it that way. And while we obviously are promoting purity, we want to be seeking purity in the dating relationship. This is something that should be on the mind of those who are dating, in the sense that this is something they're looking forward to. And whether or not it should be a motivation to get married, I would just turn to what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Corinthians 7. He says, this is in 1 Corinthians 7, verse 8. He says, to the unmarried and the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. Now, when some people have read that passage, they've seen it as Paul basically saying, so if you've got self-control, stay single. And if you're one of those guys that does not have self-control, yeah, you better get married. I don't see that's what he's saying, partly because the word he uses there is specifically to burn with passion is not the same thing as to indulge in revelry, or there, you know, there's all these negative words he could have used related to sex and intimacy and all these other words we see in the Bible. Actually, he doesn't use that. And so to say that if you don't have self-control, you should marry, I think he's saying if you have this desire that you don't feel called to celibacy, you have this strong desire to find a mate, then by all means, don't think of it as wicked. In 1 Timothy, Paul addresses those who forbid marriage, and he says that's just wrong. Don't listen to those who will forbid marriage and claim that it's the holy higher life if you're single as opposed to being married. But just know that if you get married, he says this later in 1 Corinthians 7, if you get married, there are going to be some challenges in certain areas. You're going to face certain obstacles, if you will, because of your marriage relationship. And that he's just being upfront about that, that you won't be able to have the same freedom in ministry as you would if you were single. And I think recognizing the difference between someone who has no self-control whatsoever versus someone who has this strong desire to pair up and to find a mate, I think that God is saying, this is something I've blessed. And even if early on you're thinking, I just want to find somebody who I can spend the rest of my life with, and you haven't really focused on one individual yet, I think that's okay, and to be on the lookout for who that might be, but also not to make it ultimate as if that is the sole reason to get married.
Yeah, that's good. This has been a really short rush through of this general concept, but we definitely say to the listener who sent in the question, how do you know if somebody is the one? Certainly recognize that concept of the soulmate doesn't come from scripture, and instead the encouragement is to find somebody in the Lord who is and would be a potential mate. Obviously follow the wisdom and counsel of the gospel, walk out relationships in community, in your faith community, and then commit to that individual and serve them in the Lord as you're called to do in the gospel. And the result will be, yeah, it's a lot of work, but the ultimate blessing of God's design will come forth. You've been listening to the Faith Unpacked podcast. We're so thankful for your time. We hope and pray that these encourage your faith and walk with Jesus Christ. If you want to subscribe, feel free to do so on iTunes or Google Play. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to hit us up on social media or send us an email at faithunpacked@gmail.com. To hear past episodes, go to our website, faithunpacked.com. And as always, we invite you back next time as we continue to unpack our faith together.